Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
I said to a friend of mine early on, I wish I could just go into a cave with some art supplies and a journal and, you know, a little bit of food and just grieve until I was ready to come out.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. I'm excited that you've come back to join me. You just heard a snippet from today's guest, here to share her story about losing three babies during pregnancy, and now helps others with the grieving process. Death is a part of life, and today we're going to talk about how people deal with grief and how we can remain positive through the process. But before we go there, I have lots of random bits of health-related news to share with you. So let's get started, because right now it's time for the healthcare hazards of the week. And now for a special news and views I choose to share with you. Thanks to so many of you, I get emails and articles on topics that range from healthcare safety to food safety, alternative health solutions, and on and on. And I so appreciate it because there's always a whole lot of strange stuff going on. So today, I picked a few I think you need to know about. Some of these came from a website called Natural News. Natural News is a science-based natural health advocacy organization led by activist turned scientist Mike Adams, the health ranger. You need to look that up sometime. So here we go. Bad news for pizza lovers. The Food and Drug Administration says the classic cardboard pizza box is almost as bad for us as the gooey saturated fats that sit inside it. The offending chemicals are three types of perfluoral alkyl ethyl. Say that three times. Which is applied to the cardboard food containers as an oil and water repellent. In other words, it's the stuff that keeps the pizza box from getting soaked through with grease. These chemicals are commonly found in microwave popcorn bags, wax pastry bags, and many other products, from carpet cleaners to camping tents. Well, the FDA announced this week its intention to ban the three chemicals that are commonly used to make these pizza boxes and other food packaging. There is no longer a reasonable certainty of no harm from exposure from the chemicals used to keep grease from seeping through the boxes, the agency said. Environmental Working Group President Ken Cook said in a statement to Bloomberg News, "This is another egregious example of how all too often regulatory actions under the nation's broken chemical laws are too little and too late to protect Americans' health. Congress needs to ensure that chemicals that make their way into the food, either as deliberate additives or as contaminants from packaging and other outside sources, are thoroughly investigated." Whoa, who would have thought? Pizza boxes. Well, now let's jump to what some call medical terrorism. Statins Red Alert. Widely prescribed drugs, statins act as a cellular poison that accelerate aging, deactivate DNA repair, promote diabetes, muscle fatigue, and memory loss. Statins are a class of drugs often prescribed by doctors to help lower cholesterol levels in the blood. By lowering the levels, they help prevent heart attacks and stroke. Scientists at Tulane University in New Orleans found that statin drugs, which generate tens of billions of dollars a year for pharmaceutical companies, deactivate the stem cells responsible for cellular repair throughout the body. And while statin drugs have been aggressively pushed by for-profit drug companies as the miracle medicine, in truth, they can lead to disastrous, even fatal, side effects in many patients. As the UK Express writes, statins make regular users become older faster, leaving them open to long-term mental and physical decline. The Express adds, Professor Riza Izdahpana, a cell biologist and lead author of the research published in the American Journal of Physiology, said, "Our study shows statins may speed up the aging process." Doctors and drug companies have conspired for years to downplay the side effects of statin drugs, promoting the medications as miracle drugs that everyone should be taking. Some doctors even suggested statins should be dripped into the water supply like fluoride. But when patients experienced the devastating side effects of statin drugs, memory loss, diabetes, muscle fatigue, and so on, doctors simply put them on yet more medications for those symptoms. Statin drugs, in effect, become gateway drugs that lead to expanding medication prescriptions for yet more high-profit drugs. And to make this story worse, the medical system recently redefined high cholesterol to lower numbers, instantly thrusting tens of millions of people into a danger category that demanded treatment with high-profit medications. These decision panels of the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology were stacked with panelists who were bribed by pharmaceutical companies to redefine high cholesterol in a way that generated the most profits. So under this new advice, 1/3 of U.S. adults would meet the threshold to consider taking a statin, more than twice the 15% of adults who are recommended statins under current guidelines. The justification for the panel having half its members with big ties to big pharmacy, ties between heart doctors and big pharmacy are so extensive that it's almost impossible to find a large group of doctors who have no industry ties. So if you're using statin drugs right now, try to find healthier alternatives. Now don't leave the program today thinking that I told you to stop using your medication. All I'm doing is exposing some recent findings and hoping you'll do your own research, independent of industry-funded studies. That was a mouthful. Well, now here's a real shocker. Not really. Electromagnetic fields from mobile phones accelerate mercury release from dental fillings. This is especially important given that many people hold their cell phones right next to their jaws. The authors of the mobile phone study concluded that MRI and microwave radiation emitted from mobile phones significantly release mercury from dental amalgam restoration. What this means is that when you hold a cell phone next to your jaw, you are driving electromagnetic energy into the mercury fillings in your mouth, heating them up just enough to accelerate their release of mercury. You then inhale the mercury, which enters the bloodstream, poisoning your brain and kidneys. The accelerated release of mercury from dental fillings may even help explain the increased insanity now being witnessed across society. Because mercury, which makes up about 50% of so-called silver fillings used in dentistry, is a toxic heavy metal associated with mental insanity. Mercury fillings are also linked to Alzheimer's disease. While mercury fillings, called silver fillings by the dishonest dentistry industry, have been toxic since the very first day they were used, they are now far more toxic because of the ubiquitous use of cell phones by nearly everyone. Except me. While there are many chemicals and heavy metals that might contribute to mental insanity in our modern world, few of those chemicals are inhaled directly into the lungs the way mercury vapor is inhaled from dental fillings. Even eating mercury or lead is not nearly as toxic as inhaling those toxic elements. The American Dental Association, which, by the way, owns patents on mercury fillings, insists that dental amalgams made of mercury pose no risk whatsoever to human health. Maybe because they own the patent? And here's a warning that we've talked about in the past on this program. Do not get mercury removed from your mouth by a conventional dentist. Look for a holistic dentist who is willing to take the time to explain the entire removal process to you. Because drilling on mercury fillings releases toxic mercury vapor that you may inhale, as we just said. And you'll also likely swallow tiny mercury particles during the procedure. Wow. There you have it. And here's another that's just doggone scary. Human DNA found in hot dogs. 10% of veggie dogs made with meat, but private lab censors the brand names to appease the food industry. Sadly, this lab called Clear Food wants to be a friend of the food industry, they're not even releasing the brand names of the hot dogs contaminated with human DNA, even though it found human DNA in hot dogs. Troublingly, they found that some of our favorite brands contain more than they advertise. Around 3% of hot dogs and sausages analyzed contained pork where it wasn't listed. 10% of vegetarian dogs included animal DNA. And as I said, most shocking of all, 2% of samples contained human DNA. And veggie dogs were the worst off, accounting for 67% of the hygiene issues and 2/3 of the human DNA found. Kind of reminds me of the joke. What did the butcher say when he backed into his meat grinder? Oh no, I'm getting a little behind in my work. It's interesting that most of the problems were found in veggie dogs, which are considered as being healthier than meat-based hot dogs. So I guess they're not vegetarian after all. And I wondered, why doesn't Clear Food want to name names? I mean, after all, what good is knowing this if you don't know which brands to avoid? But according to the co-founder of Clear Labs, they say, we don't want to alienate industry. We're not a consumer watchdog organization. So much for Clear Foods. How unclear can they be? Just another industry puppet and waste of time. And here's another food-related bit of news. Your gluten problem may actually be caused by glyphosate. Most people don't realize it, but even though wheat is not commercially grown as a genetically engineered crop, farmers saturate wheat crops with high doses of glyphosate right before harvest, speeding the drying of the wheat stalks and accelerating harvest duration. The result is that toxic, cancer-causing glyphosate herbicide, and yes, it is a herbicide, is now found in many wheat products, including pasta, wheat bread, wheat flake breakfast cereals, donuts, bagels, cake mixes, snack crackers, and more. Glyphosate is known to be toxic at parts per billion concentrations, meaning it only takes a very tiny amount to potentially impact your digestion and metabolism in a dangerous way. So, armed with this information, if you are gluten sensitive, conduct a little experiment. Buy organic wheat and organic wheat products, which isn't legally allowed to be sprayed with glyphosate, and use those exclusively for a while. Once you switch to organic wheat, you may discover your gluten problems simply disappear. And that's because it wasn't a gluten problem to begin with. It was glyphosate poisoning. Not only is Monsanto destroying our health via the glyphosate added to crops, get this, ladies, 85% of tampons and feminine hygiene products are contaminated with cancer-causing glyphosate herbicide. Yep, glyphosate, the chemical found in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide used on genetically modified cotton crops, is being discovered in the vast majority of feminine hygiene products. The research team from National University of La Plata, headed by Damian Marino, revealed their research findings last weekend. Now note carefully that such research would never be conducted in the United States university because they've been infiltrated and bought off by Monsanto. A team of Argentine scientists found traces of glyphosate in 85% of personal care and feminine hygiene products containing cotton and commonly purchased in drugstores and supermarkets. Wow. Think about all the products we use in all hospital and health centers in the country to cure patients. They, too, are contaminated with a carcinogenic product. The EPA conspired with Monsanto for decades to deceive the public into thinking glyphosate was harmless, even after knowing the molecule was extremely dangerous. Glyphosate has even been found to promote cancer at parts per trillion concentrations, meaning that even low-level exposure from tampons might lead to deadly cancers in women. The GMO industry, however, says women who are concerned about GMOs are anti-science and too stupid to understand technology. Well, you don't have to be a technological wizard to figure that when those tampons are made from GMO cotton, the glyphosate that gets absorbed through the vaginal walls enters the bloodstream. So, girlfriends, we're being poisoned from both ends. It's not just tainted food anymore. The solution? Use organic feminine hygiene products made from organic cotton or other organic materials. And we talked a bit about this last week when we talked about filthy fashion and the pounds of pesticides used to make one t-shirt or a pair of jeans, all made with GMO cotton soaked in glyphosate. So now it's just not food and clothing. Think about that cotton gauze in your first aid kit. And worse, even your cotton ear swabs and cotton balls are usually genetically modified organisms. So, if you really want to stop putting Monsanto in your private parts, or your ears, your nose, or your mouth, you'll need to take some time to find organic, non-GMO products. Good luck. Now, let's end on a good note. Campbell's is the big first food company to disclose GMO ingredients on the label. They have dropped one of the biggest publicity bombs ever by announcing their intention to voluntarily label their GMO ingredients. Part of their previous plans for change included launching several lines of organic kids' soup and removing monosodium glutamate from all of their kids' soups, creating organic wheat versions of cracker products, increasing organics across their food lines, removing artificial colors and flavors from nearly all North American products in the next 3 years, removing high fructose corn syrup from Pepperidge Farm fresh breads, and increasing the transparency of their ingredients, including the launch of a new website, What's in My Food? In January 2016, however, the company switched sides and now openly advocates for the national standard of labeling genetically modified ingredients. They will no longer pay money to block the effort to have genetically modified food labeled. Hooray! And I say, look out for backlash from the industry, Campbell's, or you may have problems similar to Chipotle, as there are some who say that Chipotle is a victim of corporate sabotage. Biotech industry food terrorists are planting E. coli in retaliation for the restaurant's anti-GMO menu. Now, I have no idea if that's true, but I'm not against listening to all sides. You know, it's sad that money talks. Think of the millions of people who are forced to eat fake and poisoned foods, whose health is compromised, children in preschools, hospital patients, students, the elderly. But imagine a world if big food starts changing the ingredients in their products to safe and healthy sources. As my guest said last week, I think I may have a better chance of seeing Elvis in my lifetime than seeing that happen. But maybe, just maybe, if each and every one of us does something to change our buying habits, if we begin to speak with our wallets, hit them with your purse, maybe we can negatively impact the huge bottom line of the big money guys who try to rob us of our health. Big pharmaceutical, big telecom, big biotech, big agriculture, big healthcare, big food. Let's become big people. There are more of us than them. So what are we waiting for? As the name of this program insists, you have to speak up and stay alive.
I'm here with disturbing news about our favorite gadgets, cell phones, tablets, Wi-Fi, etc. Putting it bluntly, they are damaging the living cells in our bodies and killing many of us prematurely. I'm Dr. Martin Blank from the Department of Physiology and Cellular Biophysics at Columbia University. It is distressing for me and more than 160 colleagues who today are petitioning the United Nations requesting that they address this problem. We are scientists and engineers, and I am here to tell you we have created something that is harming us, and it is getting out of control. Before Edison's light bulb, there was very little electromagnetic radiation in our environment. The levels today are very many times higher than natural background levels and are growing rapidly because of all the new devices that emit this radiation. An example that a lot of us have in our pockets right now is the cell phone. One study shows that as cell phone usage has spread widely, the incidence of fatal brain cancer in younger people has more than tripled. We are putting cellular antennas on residential buildings and on top of hospitals where people are trying to get well. Wireless utility meters and cell towers are blanketing our neighborhoods with radiation. It's particularly frightening that radiation from our telecommunication and power line technology is damaging the DNA in our cells. It is clear to many biologists that this can account for the rising cancer rates. future generations, our children are at risk. These biologists and scientists are not being heard on the committees that set safety standards. The biological facts are being ignored, and as a result, the safety limits are much too high. They are not protective. More protection will probably result from full disclosure of possible conflicts of interest between regulators and industry. Rising exposure to electromagnetic radiation is a global problem. The World Health Organization and international standard-setting bodies are not acting to protect the public's health and well-being. International exposure guidelines for electromagnetic fields must be strengthened to reflect the reality of their impact on our bodies, and in particular, on our DNA. Although we are still in the midst of a great technological transformation, the time to deal with the harmful biological and health effects is long overdue. We are really all part of a large biological experiment without our informed consent. To protect our children, ourselves, and our ecosystem, we must reduce exposure by establishing more protective guidelines. And so today, scientists from around the world are submitting an appeal to the United Nations, its member states, and the World Health Organization to provide leadership in dealing with this emerging public health crisis.
After a hospital stay or other health issue, rehabilitation and therapy, physical, occupational, or speech therapy are imperative if you want to regain your strength and previous abilities. When it's haphazard or non-existent, you lose. And that's why your rehabilitation care choice is crucial. Let's spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner from the Welsh Home in Rocky River to gain a better understanding. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Why, tell us why, is daily therapy so important, and what does the Welsh Home do to accommodate maximum recovery?
The majority of the people, when they come for a short-term rehabilitation stay, on day one when we set the goals, their main goal is to, one, go home. And the way that we accomplish that is by the therapy department. The therapy department was once explained to me by a resident who had a complete success story and returned home as they use a gentle but firm touch. So even when she was too tired that day, they were gentle and sympathetic that, you know, she is going through a healing process, but firm in their approach that if you want to get home and you want to accomplish this goal, this is what we need to do. We have therapy at the Welsh Home 7 days a week. The reason we offer it 7 days a week is that we want to make sure that people are using the maximum of what their insurance benefit will allow for. Most of the time, the traditional insurances will say that people can receive 5 days a week of therapy. The reason we have it those 7 days a week is to accommodate people who come to us on the weekend or people who maybe they really need to take a day off of the therapy and restart it the next day so that they can continue to receive the maximum that their insurance benefit will allow for.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lauren.
You're welcome.
The Welsh Home offers state-of-the-art skilled rehabilitation therapy on-site to meet your individual needs. Whether you're looking for short-term or long-term care, the Welsh Home can help. And you don't have to be Welsh to call the Welsh Home your home. Call them to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
This is Pat Rulo, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. We just did a presentation to a lovely group of folks, and I've got a beautiful woman sitting here who wants to speak with us today. And what is your name?
Olga.
Let me ask you a question. After today's presentation, what did you learn that you might be able to use the next time you go into a hospital or doctor's office to stay safe?
Make sure the people attending me wash their hands. That's so important.
That's very important. And will you feel able to ask, would you please wash your hands?
I think now I will. I've learned many things from your presentation.
We've got another lovely lady who has to speak.
My name is Denise. I'm the activities director. I just thought it was really interesting on the cross-contamination, the lab coats, just how many germs are on the lab coats, how doctors may not wash them, their neckties, just your clothing, how that can all carry germs, just things I never thought of that I was made aware of today.
And I appreciate being here and making you aware of that. Thank you.
We're very happy you came. We're very happy you came.
Anybody else that would like to speak with us? Anybody else? One of you guys.
Oh, I'll talk.
Yes, of course she'll talk. And what is your name?
My name's Kelly.
And you work here?
I do. I work in the activities department.
And you guys do a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I just learned the importance of really being an advocate for your loved ones and also for yourself and just not being afraid. A lot of times we're so intimidated by the people that are taking care of us that we're afraid to question them, feeling that it might offend them. But really, I'm sure they want to make sure that they're doing the best job too. And sometimes, like you had said, it's just because maybe they're overworked or busy. And so I'm sure they appreciate the fact that we're just trying to keep ourselves safe, which would keep them safe in turn. So just really about being able to, like your presentation, the title, Speak Up and Stay Alive. It's the perfect title for your presentation. It's really good.
Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. Today, I have a guest who hosts a podcast called Create Your Magical Life that airs on our very own internet network, speakuptalkradio.com. And I invited her to share her story about how to deal with grief due to the loss of a loved one. She has experienced the kind of loss that most of us will never know. Her son Benjamin was stillborn at 23 weeks gestation on July 29, 2010, during an emergency surgery to save her life. Her first and third pregnancies were both first trimester miscarriages. So, being that our topic of healthcare and hospital safety often ends with the loss of someone we care for, I thought it appropriate to share a real person's story and how her loss has changed her. I think it's important to hear others' stories, especially when they have taken their hardship and use it as an opportunity to look in, dig deep, emerge a stronger person, and then help others who are feeling lost. And our guest today is this person. She is Alana Sheeran, and the best introduction I can give is to read her very own words taken from her website, AlanaSheeran.com, as they exquisitely paint the picture of who she is. She writes, "In my past, I've worked as a dancer and actress, a Pilates instructor, and a spokesperson for Porsche. I've tended bar, waited tables, scooped ice cream, and sold clothes. I've taught kids to dance and choreographed high school musicals. Along the way, I got a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Theater from Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, and a master's degree in clinical psychology with a specialization in applied community psychology from Antioch University, Los Angeles. I've trained as a grief specialist, a Reiki master, and in different forms of intuitive energy work. I speak Canadian, American, and French. I'm madly in love with my husband and daughter. I miss my son every day. After a decade in the intense energy of Los Angeles, I now live and write by the ocean in Ventura, California. I live for heart-centered connection." So now you know a bit about our special guest. And with that, welcome to the show, Alana.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. If it's comfortable for you, Alana, take us back maybe to that actual hospital experience and share the kind of care you received during this painful time.
Absolutely, it's fine. You know, I was really lucky. I got excellent care. I was in and out of the hospital quite a bit with this pregnancy. I was in the ER in my first trimester with a bleed. And the way it works is if you're before 20 weeks gestation, they send you to ER. If you're after, they send you to labor and delivery because there is a possibility that the baby could survive. So from week 20 through week 23, I was in the hospital once a week with massive bleeds. And each time I had an amazing nurse, thank goodness, there was always one amazing nurse. And I have to say the nurses are the backbone of the hospital system. That care, that personal attention and care that I got from each of those nurses helped me get through what was one of the most terrifying times in my life. So the last time that I went in at 23 weeks, they sent me up and I was in a wheelchair. My husband was out of town. I was on bed rest. We were staying with friends. My friend's husband drove me to the hospital in the middle of the night. And as I was wheeled in, the security guard said, "Congratulations." Oh. And I thought, oh my God, he has no idea. And that just broke my heart because I knew that this was probably going to be the last time that I went in. And I didn't know if I would be coming out, you know, with a live baby or a dead one at that point. So that was a moment that was really hard. They couldn't find my baby's heartbeat. And so after a while of trying, they took it off because they could tell that it was just stressing everybody out, including myself. The night nurses were not my favorite, but I knew that as soon as the shift changed, my doctor would be there and the nurses, one of the nurses that I knew would be there. And so I just sort of held on, and I had this experience of being completely alone in the hospital room, knowing that my baby's heartbeat couldn't be found, and I just had to be with it. There was nothing else I could do. When everything else happened, when my doctor came in and checked me and the bleeding got worse and they decided to do an emergency surgery because I was hemorrhaging, the care I received was excellent, and I was able to maintain kind of a sense of humor through all of it. And I think often we do that in when we're in shock or when we're in trauma. And I think because of that, it helped me get through until I knew for sure that Benjamin was gone. And then what they did and what I would recommend if anybody is in the situation was they put me in a room far away down at the end of the hall so that I wouldn't hear babies crying all the time. Because I had to be in the hospital for 3 days, 2 or 3 days. I have friends, and I've talked to many, many people who've experienced stillbirths who have had people say things to them that were just heartbreaking, like, "This is your fault, you did something wrong." A cleaning lady or someone came in and berated a friend of mine who had just lost her full-term baby. So it really, when you're in such a vulnerable place, no matter what your experience is in the hospital, no matter what your loss is, it's so vulnerable, and we're really dependent on the kindness of the people around us. And I think it's helpful if we have someone who can advocate for us. My husband ended up there shortly after, or a couple hours after Benjamin was stillborn and I was out of surgery. He finally made it. And so it was helpful to have him there. There are a couple things that I would say to people just to hold in the back of your mind. Hopefully you never go through this and hopefully you never experience this kind of loss. But if they offer to have pictures taken, there's an organization called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. Most hospitals around North America have a photographer on call or several photographers on call from this organization, and they will come and take pictures of your baby, and they will come and take pictures of you with the baby. Even if you don't feel in the moment like you want them, I would highly recommend having them taken, because you don't have to look at them in the future, but if you want them and don't have them, that's heartbreaking. And that's one thing that I did. Then I said no to having my picture taken with my baby, and thankfully they took pictures of him on his own, but I don't have any pictures of myself with him, and that is one thing that breaks my heart. So I would highly recommend that, and that's something that most hospitals have.
Well, I would never have thought of that, and I think I would have agreed with you. My initial reaction would have been no, to say no, but what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense, that after the fact, you don't have to look at them, but wouldn't it be nice if you had that opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting, there's a whole culture of death in our culture that is very clinical and very much about once the spirit is gone, once the person is dead, we leave them immediately. And there's a whole other culture which I started to learn about after my stillbirth, and it comes from the Maori tradition in New Zealand, where you spend time with the person who's gone. And in New Zealand, a lot of families choose to bring home their stillborn baby and have them in the home for a few days. usually 1 to 3 days. They have a baby carrier that is refrigerated. Mm-hmm. There's an ice in the bottom, and you can have your baby there with you. And I know that this sounds kind of horrifying to some people, but there's something about not rushing away, not rushing goodbye, that is really powerful. So I would say, if that is something that you think you want, then ask for it, advocate for it. I believe many states in the U.S., you can actually take your baby home legally. And then the other thing is, if someone you love has died and you're in the hospital, advocate for having as much time as you want with them, because that allows the grief process to start in a way that helps us through it, as opposed to when we say goodbye too quickly, it can have a negative impact. It can shut down. It can imply to us that we need to get through our grief quickly. And after my son's stillbirth, I started writing. I had been a writer, and I had my degree in psychology, my master's degree in psychology. I was just home being a mom to my daughter. But I started writing about the grief process because I wanted to capture and remember those moments. What happened out of that is people started asking me to work with them, and so I started doing grief coaching. And what I found was that most people have a very clear idea of what grief should look like, and that idea, for the most part, is incorrect. Do you want me to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was going to ask you very specifically about the stages of grief. I think most people know the old typical Kubler-Ross model. You know, you go through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. That's still a valid way to gauge if what we are feeling is, I'm going to put in air quotes, normal.
So the Kubler-Ross model was groundbreaking in its time, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did wonderful, wonderful work. The model was actually created for people who were experiencing life-ending diagnoses, so people who are facing the end of their own life. That's what the stages were originally made for. And what we've found as time goes on, and the Kubler-Ross people, once she died, they've made some changes to that, but that those stages are so ingrained in our cultural lexicon. So they are not terribly helpful at this point. Grief is not a linear process at all. And we don't go through stages. It's more like waves or a spiral where we're revisiting the emotion and revisiting the emotion and revisiting the emotion. And I think one of the things that's so helpful for people to understand is that grief can look like almost anything. It can be incredibly physical. People can get headaches. They can get muscle aches. They can have physical pain. You know, they can end up in the hospital thinking they're having a heart attack, and it's really just the way the grief is manifesting in their body. Some people sleep too much. Some people can't sleep. You can lose your appetite. You can gain your appetite can be crazy intense. You can be sensitive to noise. You can be really tense. There can be a lot of physical reactions. And there's a type of griever who tends to have more physical reactions than others. Mm-hmm. Emotional reactions can run from sadness, anger, fear, guilt, jealousy, relief, feelings of hopelessness, feelings of powerlessness. Almost any emotional reaction you have can be considered quote-unquote normal in grief. And what happens is that we start to judge our grief, and we feel like other people are judging our grief. And when you're in relationship with someone who is also grieving, like if you lose a child and you're the parent, or if you lose a parent and you're the sibling, you know, you're in relationship with those other people who are grieving, and that can cause so many problems when we're grieving differently. And there's a really helpful idea to think of that comes from a book called Men Don't Cry, Women Do, by Terry L. Martin and Kenneth J. Doka. And they talk about grieving styles. And they talk about an intuitive grieving style, an instrumental grieving style, and it's on a continuum. So someone could land anywhere in between the two. And I would love to, if we have time, I'd love to share them because I think it's really, really helpful to understand.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so intuitive grievers are, I was an intuitive griever. They're the people who cry. They're the people who get depressed. They're the people who need to talk about what happened. You know, you can be confused, you can be angry, you can be irritable. And I talk about grief coming out sideways as irritation sometimes, if we're not really conscious that we're grieving. It can make us just really grumpy with everyone around us. Intuitive grievers need to retell the story. They are really focused on their internal emotional experience. Intuitive grievers tend to create or need time and space to really process what's happening. They often will seek out help in the form of a group or a therapist or a grief counselor. They get really exhausted. They can feel a lot of anxiety. And one of the judgments of intuitive grievers is that they're taking too long. But really, they're just allowing their feelings to lead the way. The other side of the continuum is an instrumental griever. And an instrumental griever has feelings, of course, but doesn't feel them as intensely. So that an instrumental griever tends to experience grief in a much more intellectual manner. So they don't need to talk about their feelings. They might talk about the problems caused by the loss. Like if it's a divorce or a death, they will often need to talk to their friends about how they're dealing with the physical problems in that world, what to do with the kids or how to, you know, pay the bills or whatever that is. They might feel the need for company, but they might not want to talk, like I said, about the loss. They just might want to be around people. They also tend to manifest their grief more physically, and they also tend to want to do things in a physical way. So build something, play a sport, you know, get back to work, anything that solves a problem to return them to a feeling of normalcy. So in our culture, women tend to be intuitive grievers and men tend to be instrumental grievers, but that's not necessarily the case. And one thing that happens is when a man is an intuitive griever and has a lot of feelings, or a woman is an instrumental griever and doesn't seem to show all that much emotion, people are quick to judge. The ideal, perhaps, and I want to say this very carefully because I think everyone needs to figure out how grief works for them, but the ideal is to let it be just an emotion and not attach a story to it. So for me, I'll go back to my personal experience. I would spend this time crying and just releasing all this emotion. And for a while, there was a story in my head. What did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? Is there anything I could have done to save my baby? And after a while, that story stopped, and I realized, I just need to cry. The story isn't important. I can't change it. It doesn't matter what happened or what didn't happen. I just need to grieve, because that grief is so, it's actually really valuable to experience in the sense that it is a powerful cleanser. It's a powerful healer. And it can, if we allow it to, it can teach us some pretty big lessons and gifts.
Now, you talk about a cave bag idea when recognizing your own grief triggers. Tell us more about the cave bag.
So the cave bag came from my feeling that I said to a friend of mine early on, I wish I could just go into a cave with some art supplies and a journal and, you know, a little bit of food and just grieve until I was ready to come out. Mm-hmm. And she said, and that's a very intuitive griever thing to say. And what she said to me was, well, why don't you put a bag together that has all the things that you wish you would have with you in that cave? And then when you have some time, you go into your bedroom and you shut the door and everything's there. Or you go to the coffee shop and you shut the door. Or you go to the beach and you shut, you know, and you spend time alone and you just get to do what you want. You get to go into your cave. But you don't have to think about it. And so I shared that idea and a couple of people just really ran with it. One woman made a video about it, and it's about comfort. So what feels comforting to you? Is there a yummy scarf? A friend of mine who had been through a year of really intense grief sent me a pashmina shawl. And so that was my grief shawl. That was what I wrapped around me when I needed comfort. Wow. And so that went into the bag, the cave bag. Lip balm could be comforting. Hand cream could be comforting. Your knitting could be comforting. A particular book, the Bible. You know, whatever is comforting to you, you can have it in one place, and then you just carry that bag around with you. And so whenever you need that little bit of comfort or you have time for it, then it's there.
I love that idea. That's a beautiful idea. I have a fairly decent sized closet, one that you can sit in. And sometimes just when the day gets to be too much or the people get to be too much, sometimes I use those words and I say, you know what, I just want to go home and sit in my closet. So, and people around me know, you know, my daughter goes, did you sit in your closet today? You know, so I understand that whole cave bag idea. And I think that's a genius, genius idea. It's a great thought. I hope people can use that. And you've got some thoughts and some tools on your website as well, don't you?
Yeah, it's Alana Sheeran, and most people spell the last name wrong, so it's alanasheeren.com. And you know what? You just reminded me, I do have a free ebook on my website called Picking Up the Pieces about grieving. And it was written by me and by a number of other people who've experienced grief. It talks about grief of all different kinds. And it's a little workbook. So you can take it and work through it. You can read it. And it's just free on my website.
And it's lovely. I read it myself. And I would suggest that people head over to Alana Sheeran with an E-N, S-H-E-E-R-E-N.com. And as I mentioned at the top, Alana's podcast, Create Your Magical Life, can be heard streaming and on demand 24/7 at speakuptalkradio.com. And she will be back next week to share a favorite topic of mine, space clearing, and how paying attention to the energy and feelings you pick up within your home or office and making adjustments to your living space can alter your life and relieve you of emotional, psychological, and physical stress. So that promises to be a conversation that you don't want to miss. And before we end, I want to read another passage written by Alana, an excellent writer. Really, I just so appreciate how you phrase things because it gives us something to think about and perhaps we can accept this into our lives as well. She writes, I think we are all here to make messes and clean them up. I'm interested in our interconnectedness, our similarities and differences, and the ways we show up. I believe in the freedom we have to choose and the importance of taking responsibility. I believe in our inherent worth. I believe there are gifts in the darkest moments and that we are all deserving of joy. I believe in accepting our ugly bits, our angry parts, and our own lack of grace. I believe that as each of us steps more fully into our own power and lives in greater alignment with our deepest desires, we open the door to the empowerment of others. And Alana, your work and your podcast certainly open the door to the empowerment of others, and I'm so happy to know you and share you with our audience. Thank you for being here today.
So, thank you so much. It was my absolute pleasure.
Speak up and stay alive. Five simple words that address a complex problem, and that is your safety when it comes to every healthcare or hospital encounter, or the safety of your family and friends. These words need to be in your mind and on your lips. And to help with that, I wrote the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Hospital Survival Guide, on the recommended reading list of the U.S. Army's Medical Department Office of Quality Management. And it should be on your reading list too. Get a copy for yourself. Give some away as important gifts. Bring the book to the hospital with you. Lay it on the tray table. Now, without saying a word, everyone knows that you are an e-patient, equipped, and eager to get out unharmed. You can purchase online for only $19.95 at the website speakupandstayalive.com or call me and order by phone 440-725-5462. That's speakupandstayalive.com or 440-725-5462. Speak up and stay alive. The book tells you how, and I hope you do. You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, with the goal of keeping you safe during every healthcare and hospital encounter, and also keeping you healthy and away from the onslaught of harm that seems to hit us from every angle. Today, we talked about a few of them. Stay away from delivery pizza boxes, rethink and revisit the taking of statin drugs, keep that cell phone away from your jaw and teeth to avoid mercury leaching, beware of human DNA in your hot dog, buy organic wheat products to test for gluten sensitivity, and don't stick Monsanto tampons in your nether regions. Whew. Crazy stuff you couldn't make up if you wanted to. The point of all of this is simply be informed. Obviously, you can't avoid every attack on your health, but being aware is the first step. The next step is to react by speaking with your wallet. Simply refuse to buy or take part in anything that smacks of big money gone amok. We do have power. We just don't know it. So, this week, let's all of us think about what we purchase, where we shop, where we eat, what medications we take, and ask questions. Make your own decisions and just say no if you have to. And then, come back next week when our guest returns to talk about energy clearing and the clearing of spaces around us to improve our health and mental attitude. That's right here. Same time, same place, but oh, never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week, free from glyphosate and scary hot dogs. I am Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
I'm Jerry the Germ with a Speak Up and Stay Alive healthcare and hospital safety snippet just for you. Here's our expert, Pat Rulo.
Hey, Jerry. Lots of groups, clubs, churches, and even hospitals invite me to speak about patient safety and the patient experience. So if you're looking for a fun, fast-paced speaker, that's me. And you can find out more at speakupandstayalive.com. Sorry, Jerry, but germs are not welcome. Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive every Saturday morning or visit speakupandstayalive.com. Brought to you in part by the Junction Auto Family. That's where I buy my cars, people you can trust for your next Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Buick, GMC, and used cars. US 322 and Ohio 44 since 1931. Visit junctionautofamily.com. If you want to pay more, that's your business. If you want to pay less, that's Junction's business.
Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Tune in every Saturday morning. For more information, go to speakupandstayalive.com.